She's done a lot of reflecting on her life, and it sounds like motherhood prompted a bunch of it, and a new book is the result. Jedediah Bila is joining us on the line to talk about Dear Hartley. Hello, Jedediah.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be here, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining me. I've got to say, in my 18 years of broadcasting, there are two things that I stumble with saying. Saturday Night Live, and Jedediah Bila. But look at me overcoming today.
Look at that. You know what's so funny? We did a lot of segments this week, and everyone was worried about saying my first name wrong, and then got my first name, and then said Bila. And I was like, oh, you almost had it. But good job. Well done.
Thank you. We're both growing, right? Look at that.
There you go.
You with the book and me with that. So this is an interesting, I'm going to say story, because it's letters written to your son to help him get through life based on your, well, you explain the purpose and the meaning of the book and why you wrote it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a series of letters that started as handwritten letters to Hartley, actually. I originally didn't intend to publish this. I actually had a whole other book proposal that was ready to go, had been approved, and I said, you know what, I really want to do this. I started writing them about everything from character to friendship to empathy to heartbreak, and I really just chronicle a lot of my life, mistakes made, lessons learned, things that I really wanted him to know that he could revisit throughout his life. You know, obviously he can't read right now, he's only 2 years old, but I was thinking, you know, when he's 10, when he's 15, when he's 30, he can revisit a lot of these lessons. And of course, he'll be making his own mistakes, as we all do. Mm-hmm. But in terms of navigating the ups and downs of those decisions, and just feeling like he needed some sense of an anchor throughout his life, maybe he may not want to talk to me in those moments, but he certainly may want to feel like he has some guidance. So they started as letters to him and really became letters for us all. I was watching the intense polarization in the country, a lot of the fighting that was going on, and said, you know what, this is something that can remind people of our shared humanity, and maybe we can all read this together and kind of figure out how to talk to one another again.
It's branched into two different audiences, you say. So when you're writing a letter to your son, you're going to say things differently than you would to, let's say, your group of girlfriends or complete strangers. So when you're putting them into a book, did you have to change things, or did they go in as is?
They really went in as is. I mean, to be perfectly honest, the book is very raw. It's very unfiltered. There's a lot of secrets that I tell about things about my own life that I never shared. I start off with a story about why I love handwritten letters so much. And it's a story about, you know, a first love when I was 19 years old and the heartbreak that went with it and how I kind of found my way to sanity again and to peace through writing handwritten letters to my best friend. So I really, you know, and that was one of the hesitations I had. When I finished it, I looked at it and I said, do I want to share this with the world? Because I really did write it very intimately with a lot of vulnerability. And I said to myself, you know what, if I put this out there for people, maybe they'll be inspired to share those vulnerabilities with other people. Maybe they'll be inspired to write letters like this to their own children, grandchildren, whoever it may be, and just to open up and have these really important conversations. And I always say, if you're not willing to share those vulnerabilities, you're not really going to get anywhere, because that's how you really bond with people. Everyone has weaknesses. Everyone has made mistakes. And I always feel like we get to a better place as a society when we're willing to put those on the table and say, I've been there. This is my life. What is your experience? So that's really what this is. It's a very intimate journey.
I wonder how much of this, though, was written for you to get closure. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. If it helps you, you know, great. How much of this was sort of closure or catharsis for you?
You know, I think that that's a great question, actually. You know, when I wrote some chapters, I did shed tears, particularly the ones that involved, you know, my college experiences. And I definitely shed some tears at the end when I kind of had to close the book, because it felt like I had kind of poured my heart out in this whole thing, and now I was leaving it and putting it out into the world, and it felt very scary, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I think there was a lot of good that came to me from writing it. I absolutely do feel that, but that was not the motivation. I think that I saw my kid's face through the whole thing, if I'm being 100% honest. But yeah, absolutely. You know, when you write stuff down, and you're sharing your heart and sharing your life, I think there is a lot of catharsis that comes from that. It's kind of like journal writing. Everyone who's gotten involved in journal writing kind of feels like they get closure on issues, they see them differently. And that was kind of the point, right? If I could walk through this and I could illuminate those lessons and even be a better person as a result of writing this book and sharing those things that I had never shared before, I'm going to be a better mom. I'm going to be a better friend. I'm going to be better to Hartley. And I want him to have that openness with me in terms of a relationship. I don't want him to feel like it's one-sided. I want him to be able to come to me and share something he's going through and have me in return share something, hey, this happened to me when I was 15 years old, and I really want that openness. And the only way to really do it was for me to lead on that, and that's the kind of relationship I have with my parents, so I really wanted that for him.
There is something about writing a letter, as you say, and something that, I don't know that I've shared this story on the air, but something that we do in our house on every November 11th is we sit at the coffee table and we handwrite letters to the troops. And we send pictures of the dogs and they make paw paintings, and we actually write the letters from the dogs on loose leaf sheets. And there's just something so fun about, it's like 2 hours, you know, your hand gets numb, right? Because, you know, we don't all write nowadays, we all type. But there's just something about putting that pen to, physically, the pen to the paper and writing that is so cool.
Yeah, you're right. And that, I love that story about the dogs. We also have a dog, Daisy, here, who's a huge part of our family and a huge part of Hartley's life. I think you're right about things being handwritten, and I've always been a fan of everything being handwritten. I'm a little retro because I don't love, you know, I'm not a huge person when it comes to technology. My last book was hashtag Do Not Disturb, so you can get a sense of that from there. But yeah, you know, and that was one of the things. When I wrote it, and really a bulk of it was handwritten first, you really are inclined to reveal more because it feels very intimate and it feels very safe and it feels very personal. When I went and moved that over to a computer setting, I was like, oh, wow. You know, had I started on a computer, I don't know if it would have been the same level of intimacy. So I'm glad I did it that way, actually, especially for a book like this. And I totally, totally get what you're saying. And I think that's an amazing... That's an amazing thing that you guys do with the dogs and the prints. I absolutely love that.
And what's really cool, though, is with the timing, they actually get replies back. The dogs get mail around Christmas time. That's actually when the replies come back. And they get pictures of dogs and from the military bases. It's really fun.
That's great. They need something to open to, right? I mean, Daisy has her stocking, so I totally get it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Two things on this one. How would you describe this book to Hartley in one word? And after he reads it, how will Hartley describe the book in one word?
I would describe it as just one word would be conversation. And that's one of the themes that runs through it, is just talking to people again and being able to sit in rooms full of people who see the world really differently from you and just having that really important conversation. I don't know how he'll describe it to someone else. I think he'll maybe say it's really personal. You know, it talks about our family, our holiday traditions, you know, conversations I have with my mom and dad, some that went really well. And I even share some conversations that happened that didn't go so well. I share regrets when it comes to decisions I made about work and jobs that I should have said no to but said yes, and jobs that I should have said yes to and said no. So it's very, very personal. I think he'll find it really personal, but... I don't know. I think it remains to be seen. I'll definitely get back to you guys when he can read and when he can appreciate something like this and let you know. And I'm very curious how the readers receive it as well. I wrote this for, you know, for students, for parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, even if you don't have children. But, you know, you have someone in your life of the next generation that you just want the world to be better than it is today. There's a lot of fighting going on. There has to be a better way to deal with issues than what we're doing right now. Now, of course, it's all fueled by social media and cable news and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, when the holidays come and when moments of togetherness come, we all sort of remember for a moment that we're all still people. I'm trying to carry that through and hold on to that even when you fiercely disagree with someone else.
Would you have wanted the solutions or the answers to some of these moments then, or does figuring it out later help you grow as a person? Like, is there one moment where you can say, I wish I knew that then, and then one moment where you'd say, I wanted to learn that as an adult because that helped me grow?
You know, I wish I knew. When I was younger, I really wanted to be an actress. That was my passion. I was very shy. So I was kind of a coward, honestly. And I remember going out to LA, I talk about this, and a couple of times really having opportunities extended my way that could have been promising. Who knows? I mean, it's a very tough business. Who knows what would have manifested? But I chickened out. And I wish I would have known, you know, then, like, just do it. You know, just try it. If you fail, like, so what? You'll be able to say to yourself, oh my gosh, I gave it my all. Maybe you wouldn't have liked it anyway, or maybe you would have discovered something else on that journey. So I wish I could go back and tell my younger self, just don't be so scared that something's gonna not work, or, you know, just kind of go. If you feel an impulse to do something and you're passionate about it, just let it happen, put your all in, and if you fall, you will pick yourself up. It will all be okay. I think that on the other side, I'm trying to think of an example of something that I think that when I was younger, for many years, I didn't want children. I talk about that in the book too. I didn't know if I'd be a good mom. I didn't know if being a mom was for me. I had a lot of, you know, fears about that. And I waited, and I'm glad I waited, because I waited and I wasn't in the right place in those moments in my 20s. Me personally, I know there's a lot of people that are, but I wasn't in the right place for this journey. This journey came to me with the right person at the right time when I was in the right head for it. And I am lucky that I waited in that regard. And I think I've learned so much about myself at this stage of life, and so much about everything, because I'm a more open person than I was in many ways back in the day when it comes to this kind of thing, when it comes to really giving of yourself to a child. So, yeah, I guess that would be my answer.
Oh, great. So now I have to ask you about your appearance on The View last week, because it seemed like you were welcomed and it was lovey-dovey, and then it kind of took a turn. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, I was. Well, I mean, my plan was to go there and talk about the book. I was aware ahead of time that we were going to talk about vaccine mandates. I did a pre-interview, so I laid out exactly how I felt about it. It's also very public how I feel about it. On social media, I had revealed that I was unvaccinated, that I had a medical exemption that had been written by my physician, that I had gone to my doctors and they had said, hey, listen, this isn't good for you. Here's why. And multiple doctors, one wrote an exemption, that's an infectious disease vaccinated specialist in New York City, who said, you know, not for you. Here's why. And I made that decision. I had COVID 19 months ago. I have immunity to the virus that's been lasting and durable and pretty impressive. That's my silver lining from getting COVID, which was not fun. So I was very open about that on social, and I was open in my pre-interview. So I was excited to go on because I felt like, you know what, I think this is an important conversation. You know, a lot of people in the country feel the way they do, and a lot of people in the country feel the way I do. So let's talk it through. We did a question on the book that Sarah asked, which I was grateful for, and then it got very heated. I was essentially labeled as misinforming the public, essentially for just giving CDC data. Mm-hmm. You know, which is that if you are vaccinated, you can get COVID and you can spread COVID. And we know that there are, you know, a lot of breakthrough infections that have happened around the country, hundreds of thousands of them, actually. And I was really not talking about the vaccine. I was talking about the mandate. So my point, and I made it very clear, is I'm not anti-vax. My child has received other vaccinations. My parents were vaccinated. For COVID-19, I actually made those appointments for them. My position was, I want everyone to make their individual decision, because when it comes to health, everything is personal. My situation was unique. I went to my doctors. I want to feel empowered by my own decision making and the advice of my doctors to make the right decision. And if the vaccine does not prevent transmission, there is no scientific justification for a mandate. Not for a vaccine. If people want to get vaccinated and boosted, that's completely up to them, and I 100% support them in the decisions that they make for their health. But I also want that same kindness back at me for my predicament and the predicament of many people around the country. So it's sad to me the way that it went down, because I was cut off, I wasn't able to speak, and I was left feeling, if you didn't want this viewpoint on air, you should have just not invited me, right? Because we went through a whole pre-interview, though I didn't provide any surprises. This is how I feel. So it was really bizarre. I feel kind of odd about the whole thing. I don't know what, you know, their perception is of how it was going to go down, but I was hoping for a real conversation. And if you have a problem with what I'm saying on air, that's totally fine. Tell me why I'm wrong. Let's talk about it. And one thing I will say is I heard from a lot of people in their audience. Some agreed with me. some thought very differently, but all of them said, I wanted to hear that conversation play out on television. It's important. I want to know why she feels the way she feels, and I want to know why someone else would say that's not the right way to look at it, X, Y, and Z. Because I think we, you know, that has a domino effect out, and it sends a message to people at home. You know, talk with people who see this issue differently at your dinner table, you know, at your family gathering, on the phone, you know, if you're doing virtual gatherings, whatever it is that you choose to do in your house, this conversation's not going away, so let's just have it. So that's my takeaway.
And I agree with you. I mean, I'm fully vaccinated, but I'm one of those people who I don't use the platform to tell people what to do. Like, I'm on your side. Do your research. I'm not a doctor. Don't listen to me. I'm not telling you what to do, right? And to me, that segment, I did see it. It seemed almost kind of ambushy. Let's get all the lovey-dovey book stuff out of the way, and then go in for the kill. And it's like you're one of them. You were, right? You've got the legacy with the show. It just kind of seems like they turned on you. I mean, have you talked to any of them since? What's happened since then?
I haven't. And it's funny because I do consider them all, you know, we had a very good relationship when I hosted there. In fact, I had done the podcast with Sunny recently and talked about how, you know, there were some executives there that were not great and made the environment, you know, not fun in many ways. But the cast and I got along fantastically. The EPs, everyone who's there now, you know, the people who work behind the scenes, great relationship. The segment producer who actually, you know, did this segment, his name is Jason, he's wonderful. He's a nice, you know, decent human being. I've had a great relationship with Ryan Tata for a long time. So I haven't spoken to anyone. I did speak to the segment producer afterward, Jason, and did, you know, express, he was very kind to me, and I did express that I felt like it was kind of sad and disappointing because I really was there for a conversation, and I do know them. Funny was at my wedding. I mean, you know, these are people who Sarah endorsed the book, you know, so I think I was left feeling like, why was I there? Was I there for that moment? That happened that way. I hope not. Was I there? Why was I there? Because if you really want that viewpoint heard, you would have just let it roll out. Let us talk it through, you know. If you didn't want the mandates addressed, then you shouldn't have had that as a segment, and I could have come on and talked about the book and done, you know, some reminiscing. You know, it's not my show. I can't dictate, you know, the topics and whatnot. But I am someone who's used to being outnumbered. I worked on that show. We had a lot of disagreements on air. This vaccine issue has become very personal, and I think it's personal because it involves people's health, and I completely understand that. I think it's emotional because people lost loved ones. People got sick themselves. I got sick. My husband got sick. My baby was exposed. I know people who lost their lives. I know people throughout this lockdown who lost their businesses. I mean, we have friends that, you know, didn't come from money, worked their whole lives to start a business, lost everything because of lockdown. So this is an emotional issue from many different angles. I want to be compassionate to that, but I also want to be heard, you know, and I also feel for nurses and doctors who worked in the trenches helping people to get better, got COVID, recovered, have immunity, and are getting fired. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense to me, and it's not grounded in science. So I also want to speak for those people as much as I can to say, hey, look at this. Look at what we're seeing. We have 129, you know, instances now, studies that are out there that confirm natural immunity. We know that the vaccine, you know, is a personal choice because it doesn't stop transmission. So this isn't about the collective. This is about an individual decision about do you feel this is good for you in terms of reducing risk? Have that conversation with your doctor. So I find it odd that me saying, I want you to make the decision for yourself. I want you to consult with your doctor. I want to empower you and support you in that decision, that's somehow controversial. That to me shouldn't be controversial. And I had wished that they would welcome that at the table, especially because they knew that's where I stood, right? So it seems weird if you didn't know that's where I stood, or if we suddenly went to a topic on mandates unexpectedly, then I think what unfolded, people would still be like, why did they have a conversation? But it would at least make more sense, and that's not how it played out. So I'm confused more than anything, to be honest with
but
those are the media landscape sometimes.
It's like jumping on someone for smoking and saying, think about what it does to others, and not, hey, you're poisoning your body, you should stop for yourself, right? Like, they called you selfish is really what happened.
The way that it sounded was that I was being painted as someone who was prioritizing my health at the expense of the common good. And I always remind people, you must prioritize your own health. You know, I'm a mom. I have a 2-year-old. If I go to my doctors and they say, these are trusted doctors, you know, I had Lyme disease years ago, and I navigated that with the help of these individuals and got better. These are people who, you know, at least two of those doctors I know for sure are vaccinated themselves. These are not, you know, anti-vaxxers that have some agenda. They're not political. They're doctors, and they're looking at my particular medical history and some of what happened, you know, during COVID for me, and just saying this is what I recommend. And I fully agree based on the research that I've done, and do have this immunity that I, you know, I was very careful over the course of the year documenting that immunity, wanting to make sure that it stuck when data really didn't exist. You know, I stayed home from work for a while, for a long time, actually. I wore the masks, you know. I followed the protocol initially, and then I watched the data come in, and I paid really close attention to that. So I am someone who cares a lot about everyone, including my own parents, who are elderly, are vaccinated. And, you know, I would never, I don't seek to wish harm or do harm to anyone. And if you know me as a human being, which they do, all of them, they know that to be the case. But the common good is made up of individuals caring for themselves. If individuals stop doing what's best for themselves, there is no common good because we are part of that common space. So I just don't, that's just not how it works. I mean, telling people not to follow their doctor's orders and to instead follow a one-size-fits-all approach does nothing. It is horribly the opposite of compassionate, frankly, to those individuals. And it also just doesn't make any sense. If you're trying to have, you know, everyone make the right decision the goal is to make a pandemic go away. Well, that involves, you don't need people sacrificing their own health and getting sick and potentially dying, you know, one way or the other. Let them have those conversations with their doctors. And that's what I support. So I don't know really what happened there. You'd have to ask them, but I know who I am and what I value and how much I care about people and what my last year has looked like and what my immunity looks like. It's all documented and what my exemptions involve and why. And I feel really confident in my decision. And I think people around the country who are making decisions for themselves just need to feel confident in that, whether you get vaccinated, boosted. I have friends that are unvaccinated. I have friends that are vaccinated, triple vaccinated. I have friends that can't wait for a fourth booster. I have friends that don't want the vaccine at all for whatever reason. You know, these are all people that are part of my circle, and we all have no problem engaging with each other and accepting that we all see this a little bit differently, and we all have different bodies and different medical histories, and that's to me the appropriate way to approach this thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're 15 minutes over. It's wrapping up on my screen here like it's the Oscars. Wrap up. But one quick point. I've kept you too long. One more quick point that me as a journalist for so many years and as an entertainment reporter, when your segment, when it said, let's address the elephant in the room, that struck me as odd because that would not have been an elephant in the room to the viewers or to the audience. That seemed like it was something internal. It seemed like some sort of bitterness or hostility towards you there. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. It certainly wasn't. I had announced that I would be remote. You can go on Twitter and see a whole thread where I say, like, hey, I'm not vaccinated. I have a medical exemption from, I explain the whole thing. I say there are some studios that I won't be able to be in person because they have put a mandate out and they're not accepting, you know, COVID testing and they're not accepting any. You know, I had also volunteered to test. In fact, I had an appearance scheduled in October to host, and at that point with Disney, there was a medical exemption that was, they said, you would be fine, your medical exemption is fine, we have to COVID test you, and I said, fine. They came and tested me, I COVID tested negative, as I would expect to, and then they called me the next day and said, oh, wait a minute, there's a new mandate in place. So this was not, to me, I mean, it was pretty obvious why I wasn't there, so what I would have appreciated is just like, hey, Jed's not here, she's made this personal decision, you know, with her doctors to not receive this vaccine. And that's really it. There's no story there. And then let's hear what Jed, you know, we're going to talk about these mandates and let's hear a different perspective than what we have and where that's coming from. And then feel free to challenge me by all means. But, you know, you can't challenge people's decisions when it's, you know, my doctors somehow are on my list of political pundits, politicians, corporate bureaucrats over my own physicians. That's just silly. So I don't know why it was phrased that way. Maybe they felt that their audience wasn't aware for whatever reason of why I would be at home, but I don't know. I can't really speak to that.
We've got to go. I could talk to you all day. One quick thing. If you could go back and give yourself advice before, because it ties back to what the whole book is about. If you could give yourself some advice before that appearance of The View, what would you tell yourself?
I tell myself to do exactly what I did, which is to go on. I was happy to be there. I think the audience saw that I was happy to be there. I was smiling. I was excited to talk about my book. And I tried my best to make my voice heard. I want my child to know the theme of this book is believe in yourself, be brave enough to go into spaces where people disagree with you and say your piece. And people, you know, people show themselves in those moments, right? So it was their choice to respond the way they could have responded the way they did and been like, oh, misinformation, even though it was not. Or they could have had a conversation in that moment. I can't control how they approach the situation, but I can control the way I approach the situation. I didn't get angry. I didn't yell and scream. I didn't try to shut them down. In fact, I really wanted to hear more about why they felt I was wrong so that we could have that very public, very important conversation for the country. So I wouldn't do anything differently. What I would remind myself is, you know, when I got out of the segment and I was like a little confused, this is going to happen in media sometimes. And sometimes what you anticipate is not how it goes, but be yourself. I feel like my kid would be proud in that moment of me having the guts to speak my mind. And I want him to see that. I want him to see you go into spaces and be respectful. The whole book is about respectful exchange of ideas in a free-thinking society. Really, that is the backbone of the book. So it was kind of ironic that I show up to talk about that, and it's like, shut down, you know? But that's a message, too, about what spaces look like in media today, what can be better, how we should do better. And don't shy away. You know, I would never shy away from a difficult discussion, even if I knew it was going to go that way. It's just these topics are just too important.
Well, this is going to be awkward because I got to shut you down. But it's because we've gone 20 minutes too long, okay? It's nothing.
We had a great conversation, so I totally get it. Thank you so much.
And we loved having you here, unlike those other... Well, anyway, it's just the book is called Dear Hartley, The Mom is Jedediah Bela. Thank you so much for joining us. Wonderful chatting with you, Jed. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.